Especially focusing in upon what the book of Proverbs has to say about wisdom tonight. And before we go any further, just by way of reminder, when Proverbs speaks about wisdom, or really all the teaching in the book of Proverbs, it's designed for what purpose? What kind of instruction? For what purpose? Not everybody at once. Isaac. Primarily to what? Okay, all right. The primary audience we noted really is young men, though of course everyone can benefit from it. And primarily to help young men in what? Okay, to live their earthly life properly, okay? So it's really not a book that's talking about heaven and talking about the afterlife and things like that, is it? It's very much this world, this earthly life. What would you say the book of Proverbs is extremely practical? Well, you better say it is, because it certainly is that. So that's what we want to remind ourselves as we go on further in our study. We looked last time just in an overall way at the structure of the book, this outline. I think there's some more sheets on the back table. Didn't get a sheet Sunday morning that gave the outline and the structure of the book of Proverbs. So these various sections... We have already looked at the introductory verses 1 through 7, and tonight we're going to begin to look at chapter 1, verse 8, through the end of chapter 9, a very lengthy initial section that is a father having a conversation with his son. And obviously the son is about ready to venture out on his own. Leave the household, so to speak, and be on his own. And the father is giving him these words of instruction, reminding him of the things that he and his mother had taught this young man. So we want to begin to look at this father's counsel section. And I asked everyone to read through that section for tonight's class. And everyone did that, right? Right? Okay. Some of you are nodding vigorously. Very proud of yourselves. Others of you are just very stoic. Looking straight ahead and not nodding at all. If you have not had a chance to read through the Father's Counsel section, basically the first 9 chapters of the book of Proverbs, if you haven't done that, try to do that by Sunday. We're going to begin to talk about that now. One of the things that you see, to me, what's just kind of striking about this is... It reminds me of the same kind of discussions that I've had with my sons, especially, because they're the older ones, and probably the same kind of discussion that you've had many times with your older children, okay, where you're kind of preaching at them. And, you know, of course our kids love that when we do that, you know, like the eye roll starts going, you know, you go again. And they get very adept at that. But we keep preaching at them anyway, and we keep saying these things. And when you look at the first 9 chapters, what you see is this father just talking and talking and talking and talking. For 9 chapters, he's talking to his boy, which is probably about right. And do you see that he's talking about a lot of different subjects? If you try to outline... these first 9 chapters, that's like trying to outline a speech that you gave to your teenage boy, you know, at one point, which was probably his reaction. And it just doesn't really follow some kind of a, you know, organized, linear kind of outline pattern, because you talk about one thing and then you talk about something else, and then you come back and reiterate what you already said. And then you might move on to another subject, but then you reiterate what you said a moment ago over here, and then you go back and you just say the same thing you said before, and you know, you're hitting basic points, but it's not like it's some outline the way we might normally outline something in our Western world. What I want you to see is this kind of presentation of material that you see in the Father's Counsel section that is so typical for the ancient Near Eastern world. That's not maybe the way we tend to do things in our literature in the Western world. We're very outlined and organized, and I have three main points. And so here's my first point, and I move on to my second point, and I move on to my third point. That's not exactly what happens here. Father just talks about different subjects and comes back and talks about the same subject again and again and again. And it seems kind of haphazard, but that's just the way that it is when a parent's talking to his child. And the things that are really important, that you really want to emphasize, you reiterate over and over again. And that's what the dad does with his son in this section. And so I want us not to look at the entire 9 chapters this evening, but just begin to get an idea of the kind of thing that the father is doing. And then we're going to look at some individual proverbs on this subject of wisdom. Verse 8. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Indeed, they are a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole as those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious wealth. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Throw in your lot with us. We shall all have one purse. That's what these young guys out there that are influencing your son, that's what they're likely to say. We've got a great plan. It's shady, it's dishonest, but we're going to make a lot of money. And the father says, don't consent to that. Verse 15, my son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path, for their feet run to evil and they hasten to shed blood. Indeed, it is useless to spread the net in the eyes of any bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who gains by violence. It takes away the life of its possessors. Here's a father talking to his son about leading an upstanding life and not doing things that are shady or dishonest and not getting involved in things that are immoral. And all the other young people are doing it. He says, don't fall to their folly. Okay? And just notice some of the things that he says here, verses 17 through 19. Look at the figures that he uses. We talk a lot about figurative language in this poetry. Does everyone see the point of verse 17? Indeed, it is useless to spread the net in the eyes of any bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lives. What's he mean by that? What's this point about it's useless to cast out a net when the bird's watching? What's the point of that? That's right. Just using that analogy, I mean, if you try to lay your trap and what you're trying to catch sees what you're doing, it's not going to work. But that's the illustration for how foolish these people are, that you're likely to listen to be influenced by, because they ambush themselves. They're laying their own trap, and they don't see it. They're that foolish. They're that stupid. That's what the dad's trying to say to the son. Be smarter than that. Okay. So this is just sort of I'm just trying to introduce you to kind of the way that the father's talking to his son. What I really want us to emphasize here is what we see beginning with verse 20 and then interspersed throughout this entire discourse material. He talks about seeking this lady, this wisdom, and he personifies wisdom. Does everyone know what personification is? That poetic or figurative device? When you take something abstract and you metaphorically speak of it as if it is a person. Okay. You know, you can do that, say, with evil, sin. Sin will get you. Sin is smart. Watch it, son. Well, I mean, sin is an abstract thing. It's not a person. Sin doesn't think and plan, but you personify it. Okay. Well, that's what he does here with wisdom. And he personifies wisdom in a very unique way. And I want us to see this and talk about it. Verse 20. Wisdom shouts in the street. She lifts her voice in the square. At the head of the noisy streets, she cries out. At the entrance of the gates in the city, she utters her sayings. And here's what she is saying. Here's what she's shouting. How long, O naive ones, will you love simplicity? And scoffers delight themselves in scoffing. And fools hate knowledge. Does everyone get the imagery there? Now, I'm trying to demonstrate it for you, but do you see the image that he's trying to paint there? He's speaking of wisdom personified as a woman. That's why I've said Lady Wisdom. And she is shouting in the streets. And I want to ask you a question. Why is wisdom shouting? Because not too many people are listening. But make sure you get the image now. All right? Especially think about this in the ancient Near Eastern world. The streets there in the center of the city, marketplace, hustle and bustle, all sorts of vendors, commerce going on, sellers of wares, all this. There's a lot of people who are there in the street throughout the square who are selling a lot of things as all these passers-by venture by. And there's wisdom. Why is she having to shout? Because there's so many other things out there that are trying to get the attention of everybody that's passing by. I guess we don't really have this kind of thing. I guess maybe you have it sometimes in, like when you go to the Florida State Fair or the Strawberry Festival. You know, where you're walking by and here are these people who are just shouting at you as you pass by, come here, come play this game or come buy this product, you know. And as you keep walking, I mean, you're just getting hit from every direction by all these people, okay. That's kind of thing I just can't stand. That just drives me crazy. But a lot of people like that and they're just intrigued by all the different things that attract one's attention. Well, wisdom is there. And wisdom is the most precious commodity there. And yet you got all these people passing by, and they just ignore her. And the father was saying to his son, seek wisdom. She's shouting in the street. And in fact, look at what she is shouting. She's shouting, verse 22, how long, O naive ones, will you love simplicity? And scoffers delight themselves in scoffing, and fools hate knowledge. And she keeps shouting, turn to my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit on you. I will make my words known to you. So wisdom is there, and wisdom is available for the young man if he will only pay attention to wisdom and not get distracted by all the unwise things that are out there vying for his attention. Does everyone see that's what's going on? That's the imagery that is being painted here. Okay. If you miss that, if you just kind of read through these verses quickly, like most people kind of do, then that imagery will just escape you and it won't make much sense to you. It'll just be words on a page. Now, let me ask you this question. Why is wisdom personified as a woman? Why not, you know, a man? Or why personify wisdom at all? But if you are going to personify it, why a woman? Ed?
It seems like she's almost, it's like he's talking to his son about you're going to get married and be with somebody for the rest of your life, and you're going to have to pick. You've got a couple of choices. You've got this lady over here. Here's all the questions you've got to offer. Here's this.
Remember, at the end of the book, the whole discussion at the very last section of the book is on a worthy wife. You know, so yeah, the idea of the son ultimately marrying a good woman, a good wise woman, is certainly part of what's going on. But I think that kind of I mean, we need to take that a step further. Why personify wisdom as this woman that you need to be attracted by? I mean, who's the subject here? Son, young man, are young men interested in women? I mean, maybe you didn't know this, but they are. I know that's a shocker maybe for some of you, but now this is interesting because the word wisdom in Hebrew, grammatically it's feminine gender, which is true in most languages. Abstract qualities generally tend to get the nouns that are feminine gender. But that certainly is true in Hebrew. So that kind of makes it even easier to make this personification. Because in Hebrew, the noun itself is a feminine gender. But still, the whole point of this is, he's especially talking to a young man, and so wisdom is personified as this woman who is trying to get the attention of this young man. And yeah, I do think Eddie's right that ultimately there is a connection there. There is an analogy with the kind of woman that you ultimately would marry. And the book of Proverbs makes that point, I think, very, very clearly. But just the basic idea is wisdom is trying to get the attention of the young man here. It's not some sexual thing, but it's just the idea that wisdom ought to be seen as a wonderful, attractive thing. And yet, it's in the middle of this hustle and bustle of the city square, and the young man is distracted by all sorts of other things, and she's shouting to all the young men, I'm here. I'm wisdom. I can give you instruction and enlightenment so your life will go well. I can help you steer away from folly. But what's very often true of young men? Even when they're interested in girls. What's that, John? Okay. In fact, you know, the best looking girl, the one that attracts the most, is very often not the one that would be the wisest girl for them to be with. And very often the best girl and the wisest girl for them to be with doesn't seem to be that attractive. At least at first. Not to this young, foolish, naive simpleton, you know. And she's shouting, and she's trying to, and it's for his benefit. But he's not necessarily intrigued by wisdom. And there are a lot of other attractive things out here. And one of the things that we're going to see as you go throughout the book of Proverbs, I mean, you see it a little bit here in this father's discourse to his son, but you especially see it throughout the rest of the book of Proverbs. There's the counterpart to Lady Wisdom, and that's folly. And guess what? Folly, very often in the book of Proverbs, is going to be personified too. But guess how folly is going to be personified? As a woman, yes, but what kind of woman? As a very attractive harlot, adulterous woman, just outward physically, surface attraction, she just seems great. And that's what the book of Proverbs, if you just want to kind of boil it all down to two basic concepts, this is what we're going to see throughout the book of Proverbs. Seek wisdom and run away from folly. Seek Lady Wisdom and don't get suckered in by this folly that's very seductive and very alluring, but it's really just folly. And you're a fool if you're suckered in by it. That's really what the book of Proverbs is all about. Those are the basic concepts that are there. In fact, go over to chapter 3, verse 13. And the dad talks about wisdom again. You know, he keeps coming back to the most important topic. And he personifies wisdom again as this woman whom the son ought to be attracted by. How blessed is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding. For its profit is better than the profit of silver, and its gain than fine gold. She is more precious than jewels.
And nothing you desire compares with her. Long life is in her right hand. In her left hand are riches and honor. Let me just pause there. What's he mean by all of that? Long life is in her right hand. Riches are in her left hand. What's he trying to say to his son? All right, Marshall. Isn't long life and material gain what every young man would like to have and like to pursue? The problem is sometimes he pursues those things according to the ways of folly. And it looks like a good plan, but it winds up being disastrous, and it causes his life to be in shambles, and it shortens his life, and he loses his opportunity for a good life and material gain. But wisdom is saying, I've got those things for you. Your earthly life can go so much better for you if you'll just listen to me and seek my wisdom, seek my instruction. But so many young men, they don't want to do that. They want to go their own path. And that's what the father is so concerned about with his son. All right, comments, questions before we go on further. Yeah, Andre. Sure. Right. Right. Yeah, everything in this book will have application for everybody. But still, I think you need to approach the book from the standpoint the primary target is a young man. Yeah. Look at... look at verse 16, where he's talking about, and this is still in the context of Lady Wisdom here. Excuse me, this is chapter 2, verse 16. Chapter 2, I backed up here. Where the instruction of wisdom, one of its purposes is, verse 16, to deliver you from the strange woman, from the adulterous woman, who flatters with her words, that leaves the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. For her house sinks down to death, and her tracks lead to the dead. None who go to her return again, nor do they reach the paths of life. So you will walk in the way of good men and keep to the paths of the righteous. For the upright will live in the land, and the blameless will remain in it, but the wicked will be cut off from the land, and the treacherous will be uprooted from it. Does everyone see in verses 16 and following this discussion of the adulterous woman, the seductress here? Is it a warning against literal adultery? Yeah, sure. Young men, when they start in life, when they get away from home, do they oftentimes go the way of illicit sex, and are they taken in by all of that? Unfortunately, yes. And they rue the day. Afterward, they see the folly of it. But I want you to see that when he talks here about wisdom delivering one from the strange woman, from the adulteress who flatters with her lips, and I mean, yes, there's a reference to literal adultery here, but do you see that in the entire discussion, it's all in this overall discussion of righteousness and the path of righteousness and the way of wisdom as opposed to the way of folly. I mean, really, that adulterous woman and any kind of immoral adulterous woman that you see in society, that is an example, that's an illustration of the way folly in general works and appeals to a person. And it seduces that young man. And he's taken in by that. So again, all these warnings about adultery, yes, it's a warning about literal adultery, but it's more than that too. Because it really is Lady Folly and this whole concept of foolishness that the seductive harlot represents. Okay? Comments on any of that? All right, I'd like everyone to look at the sheet that was handed out to you. Because what I want us to do is to, you can read through those 9 chapters, and I don't feel the need to just take class time and go through all of that. And I just want to give you a taste of that, but I'm counting on you reading that yourself. But what I want us to do is to see that this initial discussion, the father talking to his boy, and especially trying to get him to seek Lady Wisdom and avoid Lady Folly, that then becomes the basis for so many of the proverbs that you see throughout the rest of the book. And I want us to look at some of these proverbs. Remember we talked last time about why a proverb would be used, these little short, pithy sayings. They are memorable. And even a fool may eventually learn from it because it sticks in his brain, whether he heeds it or not. It's so memorable that it sticks in his brain. Maybe eventually he will learn from it. And there are a variety of applications. And so one of the things that we need to make sure that we do is to go through the various proverbs that relate to the themes of wisdom and folly. Did everyone get this handout? Who needs a copy? Okay, Marshall, how about you go back there and just making sure that. Thank you. In the introduction, the first 7 verses that were the introduction to the book, one of the things that were stated as the purpose of the book was to assist one in understanding a proverb and a riddle. So that's what we want to do, is to go through these proverbs and make sure everyone is understanding what these proverbs are talking about. I have selected a few proverbs that are scattered throughout the various sections of the book that all pertain, at least these on this sheet, pertain to wisdom versus folly. That's the major theme throughout the book of Proverbs. So let's just look at these. The first one there we've already talked about, a wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. Is a wise man, according to Proverbs, a man who knows all the answers? No. What's true of him, though? He knows he doesn't know, and he seeks the answer. So what I want us to see as we look at these various proverbs, and I just tried to go through all the proverbs, and I'm not saying this is some exhaustive list, but it seems to me that over and over again, the various proverbs that talk about wisdom versus folly are making these basic points. And I want us to see this as we go through these various proverbs. A wise man is someone who accepts instruction. The foolish man is just the opposite. Foolish man refuses the instruction. Why? Because he thinks he doesn't need it. He thinks that he's wise. And that's just his folly. The wise man accepts correction. The foolish man balks at correction. Why? Because he's right. He thinks he's right. And he's not humble like the wise man. The wise man is humble, and the book of Proverbs will talk about that. Several of the Proverbs will emphasize humility and its connection with wisdom. A person is never acting the part of the fool more than when he, in his arrogance, says, I don't need instruction from you. I already know. And again, one of the things that you'll see throughout the book is that young person, and again, I'm not trying to pick on these young kids over here, but the book of Proverbs does this. So, you know, it's your own fault for being young. They tend to be at an age where they know more than their parents, they know more than older people, at least they think they do, and they just epitomize folly. And so the foolish man is someone who is arrogant as opposed to the wise man who is humble. You'll also see that a wise man is slow to give an opinion. We might think just the opposite, that a wise man, you know, somebody that knows the answers, he's asked a question, rattle off the answer. No, the book of Proverbs teaches a wise man is someone who thinks before he speaks. And He's not just ready to just jump out there and give his view on everything. But the foolish man is real quick to tell everybody what the case is. You know, he's the guy that, you know, is always speaking up in class, or always the guy at work that always has the answer to the problem at work, or whatever it is. He's the guy who's quick to tell everybody what the facts are. It's interesting, in the book of Proverbs, that's the fool. But the guy who's always spouting off how much he knows about everything, he does that because he thinks what? He thinks he's wise and everyone can see it. But all he does is just exalt his own folly. So we'll see that as we go on further. And also, the wise man in Proverbs fears God. And you see that in this second proverb here, chapter 1, verse 7, that really is just right there at the beginning of the book. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. So the foolish man doesn't want your wisdom, doesn't want your instruction. He already has got it. And that's especially seen in how he feels about God. He doesn't need God's wisdom and instruction. But the wise man fears the Lord. And that's the very beginning. That's the foundation for all knowledge, is having a proper reverence for God. So let's just look at these Proverbs, and I think you'll begin to see these points here. Look at the third proverb on the list, chapter 17, verse 10. A rebuke goes deeper into one who has understanding than 100 blows into a fool. Now, what does that mean? A rebuke goes deeper into one who has understanding than 100 blows into a fool. What's that mean, Eddie? In fact, there are a lot of applications. Again, we've said that that's one of the purposes of a proverb. I mean, the applications are just innumerable. But think of the imagery first. What's the image that the proverb wants you to have in your mind? Here's a guy who's being rebuked. Now, what's the difference between a rebuke and getting beaten? I mean, a rebuke's just a verbal correction, right? So he's being rebuked verbally, but that sinks in, right? And you've just picture this. Here's a guy who's he's being told that he was wrong, and he, you know, and you can tell he's taking it to heart. That's our expression. He took it to heart. It went down deep inside him. Okay. But the imagery in the parallel line is that you've got a guy who's a fool, and he's getting beaten like 100 times. And it still doesn't get through to him. It still doesn't really register with him. But here's that one guy. He didn't have to get beaten at all. Just he was rebuked. And he got it. And he learned from that. And here's the other guy that you're just beating him. Have you ever felt that way with your kids? Where, you know, you're just, you know, I'm on lash number 98. With Nathan, and he just, that's not true. Usually just 54 is all it takes. That's the imagery. So first get the imagery in your mind, and then it will help you see the point that's being made, and then all the applications in all the various walks of life, whether it's business, whether it's parenting, whether it's whatever, all those applications will then just jump out at you. But first, get the imagery. All right, Mickey?
I was just wanting to say, from a young guy getting punched, this is what this is talking about.
Right, right.
If anybody's ever been just hit right in the nose and felt the weakness in the knee, you know, much. If you compare that sinking feeling, oh, it's knocking out many things, but all it takes is one good hit, and he feels it. I mean, it just stuns you for a long time.
Right, right.
Now, that your image here is what it's trying to say. This one blood, but this is 100.
Yeah.
And he says,
why does he keep having to get hit over and over again? Why?
It's not connected.
He keeps trying to go back and do the same thing again. Right? Isn't that? I mean that's the image, isn't it? I mean, it isn't the image of a guy who's done something wrong, and so he's been beaten for it, and so then he stops. It's the image of a guy who he does something wrong, he gets hit, and then he keeps trying to do it again. And he gets hit, and he's trying to do it again. It is humorous, really. It's just, when you think of the imagery of these proverbs, a lot of them are absurd. But that's the point. That's how a foolish person is. If it weren't so serious, it would be comical. Because that's what folly does. You keep making the same mistake over and over again, and you keep getting hit in the face, in the nose by it. And yet you keep doing the same foolish thing again. And you don't learn the lesson. But here's one other guy over here. He had to just be told. Didn't have to learn the hard way. He was just told. He was rebuked. And he learned. Now, who's the wise man and who's the fool? So, isn't that a very powerful proverb? But that's exactly the way folly is. Terry? Very good. Pat?
I went to a class with your kids. People might think that you discipline one child differently than the other. But you really don't discipline them differently. It's just if one responds immediately to some verbal abuse, the other one, then you have to keep on and on. And you verbal punishment, whatever it takes, but there's some defiance. Well, it doesn't like, that you're really being, even different punishment. You're really not.
In-laws are here, and my wife isn't, which is why I can give this illustration. Amy and her sister Julie, two girls in the family, but Amy would tell this many, many times. She was the bad kid. Julie was the good kid, and Julie never got whipped. And you tell me if I'm wrong in this, but because they tell her that's wrong, and then she and that's all she had to do, just be told. But Amy's the one that it's just keep beating her, And I know that's shocking because Amy is, such a wonderful person. But at that time, and again, I would not say this if she were here because she would start beating me after. But I think you're just exactly right. And it's not that you're treating the kids differently. It's that the kids are different in how they're reacting to your correction. Look at the next proverb. Chapter 12, verse 15, and you'll notice these proverbs are just haphazardly collected. There doesn't seem to be any real rhyme or reason to why certain proverbs are at certain places in the text. So to me, where it's found in the book is meaningless. But just so you'll know, and just to identify it, in chapter 12, verse 15, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. And that just says what we've already pointed out, but just says it in a very good way. Fool thinks he's right, but the wise man listens to counsel, listens to instruction. He knows he doesn't have all the answers. Look at the next proverb. A fool does not delight in understanding, but only in revealing his own mind. And again, I make the point that the foolish man is the one who's quick to give his opinion. Have you ever known people like that, no matter what the subject is? John will... I'm asking... No, I'm... I'm joking. But whatever the subject is, that person is an expert on it. I had a guy who was my best friend. I wonder sometimes why he was, but he was one of these guys. It didn't matter, and he was the most unathletic guy in the world. You know. But boy, he knew in his mind everything about athletics and sports and this and that. You talk about music, he knows everything about that. In education, he knows everything about that. What politics? He's the expert, and he's always quick to give you his view. And that's the way a lot of people are. The book of Proverbs says, That's the guy in the foolish man's garb. He's playing the role of the fool. Always quick to tell you what he thinks. Let me skip down and just look at some others. We have about 5 minutes here. Look at the last three Proverbs on the sheet. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him. What's that mean? Don't stoop to his level. Now, what's the imagery? The imagery is you're having a discussion with this guy, and he's, that's probably more of an argument, and he's saying something bad, and the natural impulse is to just fire back, right? Of course, the whole problem is he was spouting folly and saying things that weren't true, and just he's angry or whatever, you know. And so if you stoop to his level and just respond in kind, well, then you just become like him. Well, you're a dirty, well, so are you. And then you got, you know. And so do not answer a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him. Remember Jesus when he was on trial, and they're saying all sorts of false things about him? I mean, what was Jesus' response? Like a sheep silent before his shearer. All right, but now this is interesting. The very next proverb, in fact, this one is in the book of Proverbs. It's the very next verse. Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. Now what does that mean? Is there a time when you need to go ahead and respond to that foolish person? For his own good, lest he be wise in his own eyes and leave thinking that he's justified, that's not in his best interest. So here's a good example of where, you know, two proverbs are really giving you opposite counsel, but it depends upon the circumstance and why you're responding. If you're responding to that foolish person in a way that really is just your own folly coming forth, well then, that's not a wise thing. You're going to look just like him. But maybe there's a time and a circumstance where you can respond to him and correct him so that he will not be wise in his own eyes. So he will learn something. Well, of course, how do you know which is which? Which situation is which? It takes wisdom. I mean, that's the whole art of wise counsel, being able to look at life and judge wisely and look at yourself and judge wisely, and why am I doing this, and is it necessary, or am I just trying to make myself feel good, you know, or whatever. What's your motive? Okay. Now, let me look at one more here in the time that we have left. To me, this is a great proverb. You have to think about it, though. Very last one on the page. Like the legs which hang down from the lame, so is a proverb in the mouth of fools. Like the legs which hang, that should be hang down, not hand down, pardon me. A little typo there. Should be hang down. Like the legs which hang down from the lame, so is a proverb in the mouth of fools. What's the imagery? Now you're telling me what it means. I don't want that yet. Don't jump to that yet. What's the imagery? A animal, maybe a sheep or some animal with legs, you know, two of its legs are lame, say, it can't be used. Okay? Or I guess you could, you know, a man with one bad leg, whatever. Okay? And he says that that's the way it is with a proverb in the mouth of a fool. So here's a fool, and he's able to recite the proverb. He just recited it. But that's like this sheep over here with two lame legs. Now that's the imagery. Now what's that mean, Tommy? No, you're right. The legs are there. It just doesn't do him any good. He's got the equipment, but it's useless to him. So it's completely vain. It's pointless. That's the way it is with a foolish man. He can recite the biblical passage. He knows the biblical teaching.